And we're happy to be joined on the telephone line by Professor Michael Rock. He's a sociology professor at Bates in Lewiston. Michael, thank you so much for being with us on this tough day.
Thank you for having me, Rich.
Well, first of all, how are you doing? I mean, this is just not another location in Maine. This is home in many ways for you.
Absolutely. This is an event that, you know, we have known, people who study gun violence have known that it's a potential, it's a possibility that could happen here, but to have it happen in your backyard, to have it happen where you work, to have people that you know and you associate with be directly affected, you never expect that. And, you know, still processing, still trying to figure out how I can best help the student body. You know, my campus is still on lockdown right now, and so I am the chair of the department in sociology, which means that I feel like I should be reaching out to the students and trying to make sure that they have what they need. And so those are the priorities at this point.
Well, I think the word you used last night when we were chatting online is appropriate. And I think we're all feeling this. It's very surreal.
Absolutely. It's like I said, you know, there was nothing that special about Maine that we would expect this could never happen here, but at the same time, you really don't expect it to happen in your own place of business or your home. And the fact that it's still ongoing, it just does not feel real. It feels as if this is happening somewhere else, and we're going to wake up and, you know, it didn't actually happen. It was a tough night last night for sure. You know, the dreams were filled with things that didn't seem like they were, you know, they possibly happened, but here we are living this reality that no one should ever have to deal with.
Where were you when you first heard the news last night?
Well, Rich, I was actually watching the Celtics, and I saw some alerts on Twitter or X, whatever Elon wants to call this. And, you know, I figured that it was something that probably would be resolved quickly. You know, at most, maybe there'd be a victim or two. Certainly, absolutely no expectation that it would return into something that is quickly becoming clear that's the worst mass shooting in Maine history. And as I heard more and more information, and I heard from friends and colleagues, and you know, the rumors started flying, it became clear that this was something that was going to be absolutely tragic on many different levels. And so, you know, my focus shifted from putting the children to bed to trying to figure out what the best appropriate, most appropriate steps would be to take at this point. You know, again, with so much information that was coming in that was inaccurate and so many unknowns, it's very difficult. You know, there's no script for this. And so trying to deal with that took up most of the night and has translated or transferred into today as well.
Well, ironically, much of your work has been done studying these mass shootings around the country. And so I'm wondering, how does this one differ from those that you have looked at through the years?
Yeah, I mean, so I have to kind of go on some incomplete information regarding the suspect. It does appear to be pretty concretely reported that he was in some sort of facility and had made threats in the past, was a firearms trainer. And so we can go on that information. And then the fact that it was an attack that took place in multiple areas, that's basically what we have for information at this point. And, you know, there's pieces of this case that look very similar. You know, looks to be a white male who probably was angry, but had some mental health issues as well. And it looks as if he was using an AR-15, which is designed to kill a lot of people very quickly. So we've seen more and more instances where people are using these types of weapons. And so that is, you know, kind of similar to other cases that we have seen. Something that's relatively uncommon is the fact that he's still missing. Many of these cases, the individual either kills himself or is shot by police, or at the very least arrested. You know, we definitely are not familiar with manhunts with mass shootings. You know, this kind of harkens back to the Boston Marathon bombing, which was, you know, a much different type of situation than a mass public shooting. But we don't see these, you know, and so we're seeing, you know, Maine is a challenging place to conduct a manhunt. And some other things that I've been looking at that I'm trying to make sense of, you know, again, it's early, but it looks as if only one of the victims was female. They were all male. Now, whether that's a random occurrence or something that was intentional is remains to be seen, but it's something that I've been keeping my eye on.
We're talking with Michael Rock of Bates College. I saw an interview you did last night, and you were talking about the fact that there is no real profile of a mass shooter, and yet there are some similarities along the way. And I thought it was interesting, too, you were discussing those shootings that have been thwarted, and sometimes that's easier with younger people because there's more what you called leakage.
Absolutely, yes. And, you know, with maybe around 50%, depending on how you define mass shootings, there is leakage. 50% of these cases, leakage meaning the intentions were known, they either threatened somebody or mentioned their plan. And so it's not uncommon. I believe it's a little bit more common when it comes to younger people. You know, they're surrounded by peers. Some of those peers are maybe not particularly friendly with them, and so that leakage comes to light a little bit more commonly for young people. And so the being able to thwart these types of incidents may be a little bit easier with the infrastructure in place at places like schools. You know, when it comes to individuals who are living in the community who tend to be isolated, it's a little bit less clear exactly how that leakage can come to light and what we can do with it.
I think it's interesting to mention, too, and I saw you talk about this as well, we like to believe that we live in a safe state, and Maine certainly has been immune to this kind of thing for the most part through the years. And when something like this happens, everybody tends to feel unsafe and worried, particularly with the suspected shooter still out there on the loose. And yet it's important to note that we are in a pretty safe place here in Maine, in Lewiston, and throughout the entire state.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's important to emphasize. And it's not to take away from the tragedy of this event. It's not to try to dismiss the danger that is still present with this suspect at large. But the reality is Maine is one of the safest states in the country. We have an incredibly low violent crime rate. We have an incredibly low incarceration rate. And so that's important to keep in mind. You know, Lewiston sometimes gets a bad rap in this state. And my experience in the last 10 years has been that it's a welcoming city. It's a very clean, it's a very walkable city. I hope that this event does not tarnish the city's image. And I think that it's important for people to know that the risk of a mass public shooting, and again, this is really the only mass public shooting that we have on record in the state of Maine. So they are very rare. And I think that's just important to keep in mind.
Now, again, we're still getting information about the shooter, solid information about the weapon, although it appears to be an AR-15. Reports certainly of some mental health issues here. And there are all kinds of people pointing fingers of blame. But the question I want to ask is, what works in your research? What has been able to limit or stop some of these mass shootings around the country?
Yeah, so we are doing more and more research on mass shootings and mass public shootings in particular. The ones that take place in a public setting that feel more random are the ones that get more attention. And, you know, for a long time, they were so infrequent that we didn't really know that much about it. But in the last 5, 6, 7 years, we've really gained traction to study this, you know, from a very comprehensive angle. I was involved in a federally funded project starting in 2018 to build a comprehensive data set of mass public shootings in the United States from 1976 to 2018. And we had about 6 or 7 projects within that overall project trying to look at different angles. And one of those was we were able to access a very comprehensive data set of gun laws in the United States, variation by state, working with Michael Siegel at Boston University. And so we looked at trends in mass shootings over time and what type of gun laws seem to be associated with fewer mass public shootings. And one thing that stood out was requiring permits. You know, Maine does not require a permit for a gun. That is something that is associated with fewer mass public shootings across the country. And we are consistent with other research that has shown the same thing. And when mass public shootings happen, we found that bans on large capacity magazines reduce casualties. So large capacity magazines being magazines that can hold, you know, 10 or more rounds. This is also a characteristic that was considered part of assault weapons during the assault weapons ban of 1994. And so we found that states that have these large capacity magazine bans had fewer, had deadlier, less deadly incidents when those incidents did happen. And so this is pretty consistent with research that's been done across the country with using different data sets, using different definitions of mass public shooting.
Hi, Mike. This is Mike Sokolow from University of Maine, and I have a quick question for you.
Sure.
So it's being reported by several places. I saw it by NBC News first that the gun was purchased legally. The sourcing, they say, is from police sources down there. And so my question would be, if the gun was purchased legally previous to this person being psychiatrically committed in over the summer of 2023, do you happen to know what the law is? Who's responsible if somebody purchases a gun legally and then they're found to have a mental illness or psychiatric diagnosis which would prevent them from owning the gun? Who's responsible for obtaining the gun at that point?
Yeah, I mean, that's the sticky part, right? Because a yellow flag order would have to be instigated by law enforcement. And if law enforcement didn't instigate that, and my understanding of that law is that there needs to be some sort of a threat to the person or to others for that yellow flag to be initiated. And if that didn't happen, then I don't know who would be the authority that would confiscate the weapon. So I think that's a particularly pernicious problem that I think is going unaddressed right now.
Maine is a state with a high rate of gun ownership. We have open carry here in the state of Maine. Apparently, there was no good guy with a gun there in Lewiston last night. In your research, Michael, how often does that come into play? And is there really evidence of success of good people stopping mass shootings?
Yeah, I mean, there are stories, anecdotes of people intervening every once in a while, but it's very, very rare. You know, these attacks happen so quickly, and people are taken off guard. I also think it's just a lot more difficult to shoot a human being than some of us like to believe when we're posting on social media.
Mm.
So I would certainly not think that relying on a good guy with a gun would be an appropriate or intelligent pathway forward. They're just very, very rare. In my study of averted mass shootings, it almost never happened. And so I would hope that we would be smarter about looking at solutions. You know, somebody had posted on Twitter, I don't watch Fox News, but Newt Gingrich was apparently using this attack to push for more less restrictive gun laws. And so, you know, I feel like that is completely counter to everything that we know about gun violence and particularly doesn't work in Maine, which has some of the most permissive gun laws in the country.
Well, we all work in schools, and so we know about the things that we do there to try and be prepared for these situations. But what can you do in true public spaces like a bowling alley or a bar or a concert venue or a church or places like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that having exit, you know, my wife actually works in health and environmental health and safety. And so one of the things that she always focuses on is exits. You know, she's thinking about things like a fire, but I translate that to, you know, the possibility of attacks, you know, having exits clearly marked, having them clear of any type of obstacle. I think that's going to be very, very important. I also think that something I haven't really heard people talk about, but would be interesting to examine further would be something like keeping entrances well lit, you know, on the outside and on the inside so people can see. You know, it turns out that individuals who are interested in committing a crime don't really like to be seen before they're engaging in the crime. And so that could be a potential, you know, just an easy solution that you know, avoids all of the political, you know, conversation about guns. And so there are certain things that that can be done. You know, people will probably talk about hardening, you know, these types of areas where we have metal detectors or searchers or things like that. I don't know if there's a tremendous amount of research that's been done to suggest that would be effective. And so I think that where we're going to get the most out of these regulations would be in things like making sure people are able to egress and making sure that people who shouldn't have guns don't have guns.
Michael Rock, a sociology professor at Bates College in Lewiston. Mike, we thank you so much for talking with us. I know it's been a busy and trying 20 hours or so for you. Our thoughts are with you, your family, the entire Bates and Lewiston community, and we wish for good luck to you and everybody moving forward and dealing with this, and being able to hopefully come up with some solutions that will prevent other communities from having to go through this.
Thank you so much, Rich. Pleasure being on with you.
Thank you. That is Michael Rock with us here on Downtown.